Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt. Thanks for joining me here today for another episode. This is number 379. In just a moment, I'll be sharing with you a conversation I had with Elizabeth Copeland and Hallie Williams. Elizabeth is the creator of the stage play Honoring Choices, which is now a short film, and Hallie Williams is the marketing director for the film. The two of them also co-host a podcast called Out of Grief Comes Art, and we'll be talking all about the film Honoring Choices and also their podcast. And this interview is really important if you are looking for content for some kind of a workshop or a festival or an event in your community. Honoring Choices is a great way to break down some of the racial disparities that we're seeing around advanced care planning. So stay tuned for this interview. You'll find it interesting as we talk about the film and what it consists of. Also, Honoring Choices premiered in Los Angeles at the Reimagine Festival in September and was very well received there. So I'm excited to get to share with you more information about the film. Before we get there, I want to thank my latest supporter on Patreon, Maggie Dial. Thanks for stepping up, Maggie, and making a monthly contribution to help keep this podcast on the air. I really appreciate it. And everyone else who's been making contributions for the last few years now. Also, I want to remind you that there is a YouTube channel for this podcast where I share the videos of the interviews that I've been doing. Each of the interviews from this year, from 2022, has a video of me and the guests that I'm interviewing, so you can see us talking to one another. The older interviews were only audio, so those don't have a video component, but if you like watching videos, go to the YouTube channel at EOL University and check it out, and be sure and subscribe to the channel. And I'm happy to announce that I've now crossed the threshold of 1,000 subscribers that I was trying to reach, and I'm really excited about that. And I want to thank everyone who subscribed to the channel, and also I want to thank you for subscribing to this podcast as well. So we will move on to my conversation with Elizabeth Copeland and Hallie Williams, and I'll be back afterwards with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I'm so very excited to have two special guests on the podcast, Elizabeth Copeland and Hallie Williams. Elizabeth has been a guest before. Back in 2020 on Mother's Day, we did an episode on her grief dialogues, talking about grief stories for motherless daughters on Mother's Day. And I will leave a link in the show notes to that episode because you should really go back and listen to it to get a feel for the whole breadth of work that Elizabeth is doing. And I'll tell you a little bit more about her. She is a 40-year marketing and public relations veteran who turned her personal loss and grief into the groundbreaking play, Grief Dialogues, and built the nonprofit Grief Dialogues, a theatrical movement to create new conversations about dying, death, and grief. Elizabeth is also the Out of Grief Comes Art podcast creator and co-host and the executive producer of 8 AM, a short film on traumatic loss. She also created the stage play Honoring Choices, which in 2022 expanded into the development of a film, Honoring Choices, the film, which is now available for licensing and is an official selection of the Legacy Film Festival on Aging presentation in 2023. And we're going to talk all about Honoring Choices today. You can learn more about the film at Elizabeth's website, griefdialogues.com. Hallie is a digital brand strategist, serves passionately as the marketing director of Grief Dialogues, and speaks as one of the hosts on the Out of Grief Comes Art podcast. While serving as a social media maven and marketer for years prior with Grief Dialogues, her involvement felt all the more important with the recent and sudden passing of her father in 2022. And Hallie, feeling that loss with you. Hallie is now on a mission to emphasize the importance of end-of-life pre-planning and encourage younger demographics to explore death conversations. Forever and always an artist and musician at heart, Hallie eagerly seeks out creators who have used art to help them heal. So welcome, Elizabeth and Hallie.
Hi,
thank you so much.
We had the privilege and fun of having lunch together when you were both in Los Angeles, oh gosh, a month or so ago, maybe 2 months ago.
In September.
Yeah, for the film Honoring Choices for the Los Angeles premiere, which was amazing. And it was so wonderful to get to meet both of you in person then.
And so, like, the best pesto sandwich I'd ever had.
It was the food was great. The conversation was amazing. The whole thing was really was magical that day. And so this podcast episode grew out of that lunch when we just decided we have to talk more and do this together. So I'm so glad that you were both able to find time, because I know you're both very busy in what you're doing. But I wanted to focus in today on Honoring Choices, the film, because it's just so important. And I really want people to know about it, and it's new. So I want to shed some light on it and encourage people to take a look and figure out how they might get involved with it. So Elizabeth, maybe you could talk a little bit about Honoring Choices, what inspired you. I know you created the film because the demand for the play was so great, but what inspired you to write the whole thing in the first place?
Right. Well, great. Thanks, Karen. Thanks for having us on your show today. So back in 2019, which seems like a century ago these days, I was commissioned by Honoring Choices Pacific Northwest, which is a nonprofit up here in the Seattle area, to write a play that addressed advanced care directives. And it was meant to be a story, and they wanted to use it as basically their keynote for their conference that they were holding in February of 2020. And so instead of having a speaker get up and tell a story and then talk about helping physicians and hospital administrators and so forth to get their patients to do advanced care directives, they decided, wouldn't it be a fun idea to have a play and have this, you know, acted out in front of the conference attendees. And
which
then
is a brilliant idea, actually.
Really smart.
It's brilliant.
It was really smart. So Bonnie Bazell, who was with Honoring Choices Pacific Northwest at the time, commissioned me to write the story, to write the play. And it was a fun thing to write because it is loosely based on my personal story with my own father. But it's the story of an elderly man who receives a terminal diagnosis and his two adult daughters and the doctor. And so we performed it live at the conference. In, I think it was like February 23rd of 2020, and it was extremely well received. And we all people started reaching out, and actually Ford Hospital in Detroit was interested in doing it, and Virginia Mason Hospital in Seattle, and so forth. And of course, the plan was set that we'd start doing this show, basically across the country. And then we all know what happened in March of 2020, and so all live theater just came crashing down. Not to be done for a while. But even then, we all kind of thought, oh, by the fall, it'll be fine. You know, and obviously it was not. But the beauty of this particular play was that these kinds of conversations between patients and caregivers and doctors and nurses and so forth, these conversations were being held on Zoom for real. So we pivoted the play into a live Zoom production on Zoom, again, not having to adapt because people were really having these very difficult conversations on Zoom. And we then performed in the remainder of 2020 and in 2021. We had the original cast, we had an all African-American cast, and we had a Latino cast, and that particular script was done in Spanish. And it was extremely, again, well-received. We did a lot of these shows. And then I started getting, at the end of 2021, started getting other requests for the play again. Well, it's a lot of work, even on Zoom, to do a live production. And I've always been adamant about paying everyone equity rates and playing tech properly and so forth. And so someone gave me the idea, why don't you do a film? And why don't you do a film with the cast that is most requested, which happened to be all African-American cast. So I was going to be in New York in April of 2022. And we put a cast together and a crew, and we filmed the film in 3 days in three different locations. And I'm very proud of the creative endeavors of everyone involved in this film.
It's really amazing that the play, first of all, was so adaptable that you could just move it onto Zoom, where it seems to me what great modeling you did for people who were trying to figure out how do we talk to each other when we can't be in the same room? How do we talk about difficult, challenging things? And to have this play be so instructive to people that it's possible, you can do it. You can have challenging conversations without being physically together, though it's far preferable to do that, but then to be able to adapt it to different races and ethnicities and now into a film. It's really amazing that you've created it. Let's see, tell us more. I know you mentioned it was based, the true story is that it's based on your experience with your own father. If you want to tell us a little more about that.
Sure. Yes. It's based on my own father, who received a terminal diagnosis of esophageal cancer in September of 96. And my sister and I, mainly my sister being involved in his care and his end of life decisions, and the fact that he did get a stroke or have a stroke due to the chemo, and a lot of the story elements that you see in the film actually happened, including the fact that he just sort of randomly during chemo one day talked about he always wanted to be an astronaut, and that was something we didn't know about our father. There was a lot of things that came out during that time that we didn't know about our father that he shared, and there's a line in the play and the film that says, you know, one sister says, well, that was random. And the younger sister says, everything's random when you're waiting for chemo. And I've had a lot of people say to me, oh my gosh, that's exactly how it feels. So it's based on that story. The difference, however, is in the end, we didn't have an opportunity to talk to him about what he wanted at the end of life. So as Hallie will jump in, I'm sure, and say, out of grief comes art. I was able to write a different ending to both the play and the film, an ending I would have loved to have had that we didn't get to have. So I was able to take the story and its message and change the ending that gave me a little bit more sort of solace in my own personal grief.
Beautiful.
I would just add too that when you see the pictures, any of the pictures which happen to be on our website or whatever, Bob, the elderly father, is wearing a blue plaid shirt in a number of the scenes, and that was my dad's shirt, so it was special.
Oh, that's really sweet. Hallie, anything that you want to add to that?
Oh, I love that. I've been working on this project with Elizabeth for a while now, but I love in the film how she was able to write a little bit of a different ending than perhaps her own. But it was very comforting and hopeful and inspiring to me as I just went through my own grief with my father. And ironically, how this film kind of plays out is very similar to my experience just in February with my father. You know, there are some technical differences, right? Like my father had a different illness and a different, you know, diagnosis, and his was a little more sudden, and just, you know, there's differences, but the overall tone of having that family dynamic between, you know, sisters and trying to communicate with your father and really trying to figure out what he wants in those final stages is a big theme in the film. And that was very real in my life. So
It's so true. I wanted to mention that it's a short film, but you have packed so much into the film. Like you're talking about, those family dynamics come through really clearly, and you don't have to dwell on it for a long time explaining the family dynamics. It's obvious. It plays out before our eyes, and that's something really skillful about the film.
Oh, well, I will give a shout out to two of my playwriting teachers, Gary Garrison and James Anthony Tyler, who taught me the basics on how to write a really good play. And it is hard to write it in a short period of time, but whether it's an hour and 20 minutes or 12 minutes, you still have to have a beginning, middle, and end that's satisfying. So I guess it's a craft, but I learned from the best.
And I just wanted to say, it seems like this day and age, there's a value to having a shorter film. Like people's attention spans are shorter and people don't have time to devote to longer things.
Right, right. And we want to also have the opportunity for whoever is moderating, if it's a community event or whatever, to spend time talking about, one, what they just saw, and two, how they might be able to talk with their own family or deal with an obstinate, you know, elderly parent who doesn't want to talk about it. And so the film it's a story, but it's meant to stimulate the conversation and get that conversation going. So it's the opening dialogue, if you will. And then the rest is up to the group who wants to talk about what you do next.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Hallie, I know on the website, it talks about kind of the deeper purposes of the film and the intentions for it. If you would tell our listeners about that.
Oh, absolutely. And this is the part where I'm really passionate about. It's really about starting a conversation with your family and loved ones. Grief dialogues as a whole, if we just kind of zoom out, our whole mission is to generate that conversation about grief and dying and death. And, you know, we recognize that death is something that nobody really wants to talk about, but it is the one thing that is guaranteed in this life. And how ironic is that? So, we do a disservice to ourselves by not pausing and maybe in the earlier stages of your family dynamic saying, hey, you know, one day I am going to pass away. And when that time comes, here's what we're going to do as a family, or here's what I would like, or here, you know, do you guys have any thoughts? And it's weird because we don't like to talk about it, but it's important. Going back to the grief I just went through, my family never talked about death and dying and grief. I come from an African-American family. And then all of a sudden, as my dad was about to pass away, like literally the last few words on his deathbed, I think we were at the 2-day mark, 3-day mark, and he could barely speak. He found all of his strength to sit up and tell me his wishes, his end of life wishes. And I'm the oldest daughter, and so I was also power of attorney, and I have little baby boys and a family and just the whole life going on. And he kind of hit me with this big request that, number one, was over. So he wanted to be buried with his bass guitar and the bass guitar strap in his mother's grave with his mother.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, 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 because I'm finding out all this information like in the moment. And unfortunately, it also started to come down to like the technical financial aspects of things, which I was, as a power of attorney, I was already trying to be good about, you know, get the paperwork in, do all the checklisty things while grieving and watching dad pass. And then all of a sudden he hit me with this. And I just went to the hallway and cried with my husband. Because I was so overwhelmed, because of course I want to honor dad and give him what he wants. But also that bill financially, I'm like not in a place with toddlers to like drop our, you know, dip into our savings. And right. So then there's that. And then also, most importantly, where the heck is the bass guitar, dad? Is it like, you know, is it in your storage unit? Is it in your apartment? Like I have no idea. Like, right. And so all those factors put together circles us back to, it's really important to have conversations, and that way you can honor people as they need to be honored, or as they would wish. Right?
And isn't it interesting that sometimes people who don't think they would have any preferences for the end of life or for where they die or how they're buried, they in advance, they don't think it matters to them, but it might, like with your father at the very end, they may think of something that's amazing and would be incredible, but planning ahead actually makes things like that possible if you have time to work on it and figure it out. But at the last minute, it's so very hard to bring that about.
And then you add in the layers of family dynamics. My younger sister, of course, was there, and she, you know, just kind of like in our film, there's the really orderly sister who's very on it. And then there's the other sister who might be a little more compassionate, right? And I've always been called the cold one between the two of us because I'm just like, you know, think like pantsuit legal, like, okay, give me a list, let's do it, right? And my sister is more of the loving and, you know, so I remember dad saying this and her sitting there on the side of his bed and she's like, we'll do everything we can. And I know she was speaking from the heart and, you know, sitting at his bedside. And I mean, that statement almost sent me to tears because I was like, what do you mean we're going to do everything we can? Hold on. Like, you know, like I'm panicking. So we try to capture that in the film. Obviously, Elizabeth didn't write it for me. But when I go back and watch it now, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is a very real dynamic that I think happens in a lot of families.
Yeah, it's interesting that the story in Honoring Choices ended up reflecting both of your true life situations, which is that's really beautiful and how perfect. I mean, you're a great team working together as well.
And I really had no creative input on this. I mean, Elizabeth is really so genuinely, truly talented. But I think it really speaks to her talent because here we are. She wrote this years ago and look how much it matches up to it matches to my personal story. So ironically, she didn't write it for me. I mean, she wrote it for everyone, but she didn't write it for me. She didn't think, oh, this is what's going to, she wasn't a fortune teller. This is what's
going to happen. Yeah.
You know,
I guess that just shows how universal these situations are. And Hallie, you mentioned the fact that you come from an African-American family. And we know, I was just reading a study recently that only 15% of older Black Americans have completed an advanced directive compared with 52% of older whites. And so that seems like a huge issue. The fact that the film or the play was most requested with the African-American cast gives me hope and makes me think that maybe the tides are shifting there. But I don't know. What are your thoughts about that, Hallie?
Yeah, I mean, I will say as a Black woman and a mixed woman, so my family is Black and white. I would say definitely the African-American community is resistant to, and I wouldn't say end of life planning. I don't think it's that we don't want to plan. I think that we don't trust the medical system. I would also, I'm not Hispanic, but I would timidly raise my hand and represent them in that category as well. We come from a lineage where the medical system and a lot of systems in America just can't be trusted. They don't have our best interests in mind. So when you are then faced with mom dying or dad dying or grandma, grandpa, you know, someone dying and you need help and you consistently have never had reliant help from these systems, it's kind of like the last place you want to go. And especially with something that's so fragile and so important, we tend to turn a lot to the church. We tend to stay within our walls. And while there's many things I could deep dive into that, I still think it goes back to, it's very important to encourage the conversation sooner than later. It's really hard, regardless your race, to all of a sudden have to try to make really big decisions when you're really emotional. And what's the number one rule that we teach our kids? Don't make big decisions when you're crying, or, you know, right? Like, and here you are. And it's like, oh, this is a really big decision. And we're really emotional. So let's try to shift that habit and start having death and dying conversations sooner. So that way we're not so caught off guard. And whoever has to become captain of the ship kind of has an idea of where they're pointing the ship, at least. Hope that answered your question a little bit.
Yeah. And I love the fact that one of the stories you have to tell about your father is the bass guitar that he wanted to be buried with, because that doesn't require trust in the medical system, but it does require having conversations in advance for those special things, special meaningful moments that we would like to have at the time of death and after death. And so I think that's a really good point. Regardless of how people feel about the medical system or whether they trust it or not, there are many other issues to be addressed around end of life choices. And Elizabeth, anything you wanted to add to that?
Well, I did want to add that the National Association of African American Mayors did make advanced care directors a priority in, I believe it was in 2019 or it might have been 2020. Of course, the pandemic hit and everything got pushed out, but it is a priority among a lot of organizations and a lot of cities that are, you know, as I mentioned, African American mayors. Pastor Corey Kennard, who's one of our great supporters and actually co-moderator, he's terrific. He is out of Detroit, and he and Hallie co-presented when we debuted the film in Los Angeles in the end of September with Reimagine. But additionally, he's actually taking the film, today's Wednesday, tomorrow he's presenting with the Hospice of New York, and is talking about working on advanced care directors with specifically with the African American community. So these conversations are starting to happen, which is very encouraging. And there's, I'm just so honored that they are taking our film, that Corey's taking our film to use it as the impetus to start these conversations. And in fact, when I talked to Corey yesterday, he wants us to come in April. April 16th is Advanced Care Directive Day, if you can. It's a day for everything, right? But but at least it, you know, gives us a reason to start talking about this specifically. But he wants to do a whole program launch in Detroit around the film, using the film, and he wants us to be there for that. So it's really, yes, we did it. We did this particular film because that was the request we were getting, but it was definitely coming on the heels of people saying, we need to talk about this. You know, we need to talk about this. And something as simple as, who do you want to make the decisions for you if you can't? And that is actually one of that's the first question in the film, but I think it's the first question any of us should be asking, whether or not we trust the system or not. Who do we trust to help us when we can't speak for ourselves? And if nothing else, at the end of the film, if people get the, you know, maybe I better, and it's not always who you think it should be. And you can change it. But also sometimes you think, oh, it should be my husband or it should be my wife. Well, sometimes in very tragic situations in particular, that person is so distraught, they're not the right one to make the decision. And so we don't always think about that. So just making that one little choice as to who will speak for you is huge. And if that's all we get after people see the film and talk about it, if they walk out going, okay, here's the person I want to do it, then we feel we've been hugely successful. And that's great.
And go ahead, Hallie.
Everything Elizabeth just said is spot on. And I also just want to jump in and add, in the African American community specifically, I don't know necessarily if it's that they don't want to talk about it. I think that statement right there probably isn't true and makes some people mad. They'd be like, well, hold on. It's not that we don't want to talk about it. It's that how our families work and just the culture and liveliness. I think there's a lot of dynamics where you don't want to ruffle feathers, and we're so vocal and passionate that if we talk about it too soon, it's going to become a big thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think for everything Elizabeth said, but then she said, you know, if they just walk away, at least thinking, who could I pick? Well, for me, it's a little bit more like, how can we start approaching this? Because in my mind, in my family, like I've got a couple of people in my mind. I'm like, this person, because okay, you know. But for my dynamic in our family, it's more like, how am I going to bring up the conversation without making this a to-do? Like, I'm in my late 20s. I don't want to spend the next 60 years or however long having some fight about who's going to, you know, handle mom's stuff because both my sons are competitive and think, you know, like, that's not the priority. It's about like, how am I going to roll this out? And I think that if we can just get people to start thinking about their unique situations, that is a big win for me, at least.
That's such a good point. I never thought of before, Hallie, that there is timing is important, and that sometimes just picking a healthcare proxy, as you said, might set off a huge conflict in the family because others may not agree with your choice or may feel hurt that they weren't chosen. And you have a lot of emotion to get through just in making that choice. So I understand what you're saying. The timing really matters. And
I was going to add to that. That's why the moderation is so important, because learning how, because, you know, this doesn't have to be a big thing. If it's not going to be someone who's obvious, like a spouse, letting that person know why you would like them to be your agent, healthcare agent, and making sure that they're on board with that. Don't let it be a surprise. You got hit by a car and all of a sudden they find out that you named them, right? So just those simple things. So that's why when we do this film, the simplicity is having someone in mind, especially if it's not someone who is the logical choice. And then hopefully people will say, okay, but my family, you know, my mother-in-law is going to get really pissed that I chose my father-in-law, blah, blah. So how do I handle that? And that's why one of the reasons why we want to keep the film short is so people can then ask these specific questions on how do I handle a difficult situation? So yes, it's not as simple as just that, but just having somebody in mind is really important. But what people don't realize, I think, and that's why I don't want to make it sound too simple, but that it really isn't this huge, doesn't have to be a huge discovery. It's like anything else, bit by bit, piece by piece, measure by measure. And that's why I wanted to focus in on the healthcare agent, because it's one small part that can make a ginormous difference. But it doesn't have to. You have to sit down and write your whole will and who's going to get the kids. And that's good to know, but that's not necessarily what we're advocating to be your first step.
So true. And everyone 18 and over should actually have thought about that and even have named an agent, even though that might change many, many times throughout life.
Over and over.
Because we all need to have that. And I thought that's actually a great rationale. If you don't feel trust in the medical system, all the more reason have a person you do trust who will look out for you with the medical system and look out for your best interests. Like, all the more reason to know somebody's got your back who's going to be there watching out and making sure the medical system doesn't treat you badly.
Right, exactly. And speak up for you. My husband is my healthcare agent, and I know he will speak up, but for some reason he's not available or no longer alive. I have two sons. One of them I would definitely want to be my healthcare agent. The other one will be a puddle. He will be a puddle. And I don't care if I'm 110, he will be a puddle, because that's just who he is emotionally. And I love him dearly for that. I love him dearly for that. But I want the other one to be my healthcare agent, because he will fight to get me the right care. So these are just things and Hallie knows which ones
I know her children. So I'm like, oh yeah.
So those are the kinds of things that open discussions that we hope this film is all about, opening that discussion, that dialogue.
Yeah. And it is a really interesting thing to think about. It just made me remember, I have one older brother, and when my mom was filling out her advance directive, she felt he's the oldest child, so he should be my proxy. Isn't that what you naturally do? But I'm a doctor, so maybe, you know, that kind of makes sense. And she just ended up talking to my brother, like, would you be comfortable making decisions about my healthcare and talking to the doctors and everything if I needed that? And he said, no way, I don't want anything to do with that. And then she said, oh, well, should I ask Karen then? And he said, yeah, definitely ask her. It was like, oh, right. It made it simple, because he really didn't want anything to do with it once he knew what it involved.
That right there also shows why the conversation is important, because as much as when at the end of your life, it's about you, also there's people who are preceding you and they might not be comfortable having to be that person. And I would rather... thinking about it, I'd rather kind of know if, let's just say, I was selecting a son and he's like, no, thank you. I also want to honor you too. And I don't want you having to have all this faced with this and you're all stressed out about it. Right. So, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit, Elizabeth, as a playwright, I know you're familiar because you see it before your eyes all the time with the power of telling stories. Like we could go out there and hold workshops all day long and tell people statistics and here's what you do, fill out this form, answer these questions, and it will have very little impact. But telling a story like your film does changes everything. And so talk to us a little bit about this power of stories.
Yes. Yes, there's actually, it's called the neuroscience of storytelling. And I'll send you a link. They've actually now started to do real hard facts, research around the fact that people, their whole attitude shifts, their decision-making process shifts when you tell them a story as opposed to giving them numbers or facts or lectures. And storytelling, straight out storytelling is great. But personally, one of the reasons why we did theater and film is because theater is really the ultimate empathy generator. And by sitting in an audience, whether you're watching a play, which actually is my preference, but whether you're watching a play or a film, you are seeing someone else's story, and you can either relate to that story specifically, or you can understand it from the character's point of view, but it gives you a whole different understanding than just being told about it. So, and the reason I also wanted to bring that up was the power of story. And I have some statistics that I can share with you as well. But when they first started writing plays about dying, death, and grief, and they would be performed, I would often attend the performances. In fact, we had a run of my play, Hospice, The Love Story, which is a one act, and it ran in Los Angeles for 6 weeks. At the Group Rep Theater in North Hollywood. And so I attended these shows, the opening weekend and the closing weekend. And what was interesting was oftentimes the producer would get up before each show and he would announce that I was in the audience. And people would come up to me afterwards and invariably they'd say things like, "Wow, that was a really great play. You know, something like that happened to me when my mother died." And then for the next 15 minutes, they told me their story. And that's when I realized that it wasn't my story. It was the power that my story and the permission my story gave to others to share theirs. And the one line that I got over and over and over again, and due to this day, is, "I thought I was the only one who felt that way." But after seeing it in the film, after seeing it on stage, I realized there's a lot of people who experience that. And that is, as a playwright and now a screenwriter, that was just meant all the world to me, that people want to share their stories once they hear these stories. And even when we were in Leimert Park, what I loved, it was a predominantly African-American group. And what was so much fun about that was the people after they saw the film wanting to share their own stories about how their dad didn't have an advanced care plan, but it was grueling and they felt they weren't honoring his wishes. But after he died, they said something to their mother about, "We need to make one." And she was like, "Oh, I did that years ago. I'll find it for you." You know, and it's just kind of these funny stories that pop up and you don't realize that maybe somebody has thought about it. You just never asked, you know? So anyway, that's the power of theater and the power of storytelling is just amazing.
It makes sense that we're wired for stories. I mean, humans have been telling stories around campfires since the dawn of time. And so it makes sense that our brains respond to that and we see the pictures in our own minds, but the power of it. But I was also thinking of the importance of representation and that. So the fact that your film has an African-American cast, but you've written it so that this script or the play at least is adapted for any cast, because I think we need to be able to see ourselves within the characters that we're watching.
True. Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, quite frankly, when I wrote the original script, we just cast it with the best actors who were available, and it turned out it was a white man and two white daughters and an African American doctor. Those are the characters, and that's just the way the cast played out. Yeah. And so so then when I was requested to do the African-American cast, I have to say, I was a little nervous. It was like, you know, I'm a white woman. I don't want to pretend like somehow I know how this should play out in an African-American household. So one of the actresses that we had cast, I asked her if she would go over the script with me and help me to adjust any wording. And she did say, you know, these kinds of conversations are universal. I'm going to recommend a couple of word changes. But basically, if you allow your actors to bring with them how they would say the words, or how they would, you know, add a phrase here or there, or even the body language, you know, how their physical acting would look, so that they can bring the ethnicity or the culture or whatever, they can, you know, you're giving them permission. And quite frankly, in a lot of plays and a lot of films, you know, the screenwriter, the director, the producer, they don't necessarily want you to mess with the words or how it's presented to the actors. But with us, both the African-American version and the Hispanic version, we gave them carte blanche. You perform it the way you would be talking to your own family. And literally, as far as the actual script goes, only a few words changed. But if you could ever see, you know, the one Caucasian version versus the African American, you would immediately notice the difference in a wonderfully culturally rich way. And I'm just so proud I'm proud of my own writing, but I'm more proud of what the actors have brought to the show. And we just did the New York debut, which was really a party in celebration of the actors. And they loved doing this film. They said to me, I just feel like I made such a difference that people are going to look at this and you know, want to do something with their own advanced care directors or their own end-of-life plans. And they got paid, but they said that the best part was knowing that they're part of something bigger.
That's just so beautiful. And I know when the three of us met, along with Lisa, the amazing Lisa Paul from The Death Deck, our favorite person, I think everyone who meets her. you had just come off of premiering the film at, I think, was it the Reimagined Festival? Maybe tell us more about that, and tell us about Leimert Park, because I wasn't familiar with that area, Holly, and what and the significance of that.
Oh my gosh! Well, okay, so Reimagined Network hosted an amazing festival, and it was called the Love, Life, and Loss. Oh wait, I have it. Lost Life and Love. I have it right next to me. I have a poster on the wall, it was an amazing festival. Reimagine focuses on holding space for people in the end of life space to hold events and talk, and they're quite amazing and powerful. So they held this festival, invited us to debut our film there. We are so grateful and honored and flattered. And we, Elizabeth and I, you know, we're two moving ladies. We packed our bags and went down to LA. We walked into Leimert Park, which is a historical Black community in Inglewood. It's right there.
Right between downtown LA and Inglewood. Yes.
Yes. And that was my first time there. My husband has been there quite a few times, and he was so jealous that he didn't get to come, because it was my first time. And he told me, he said, honey, you are going to be walking into one of the richest examples of our culture that you will ever get to experience. And it was so true. For me, it was just, soul awakening. But the community and the culture that has been captured and preserved of just authentically our culture, authentically how we are shamelessly loud and vibrant and full of life. And it was just beautiful to be there, especially because everyone who was there at this festival, or who were presenting or hosting or doing something at the festival, they're all working in the end of life space. So it was really magical to be talking about something that traditionally has a taint of morbidity and sadness. And then you're in such a lively place. It was awesome. And I don't mean awesome like awesome. I mean awesome. Like, it was it was bold. And I think that our film was received very well. Again, the same thing happened that Elizabeth told you about people coming up afterwards. Oh, I had a situation. I had a story. So we had great conversation after the film. people were talking and talking and talking to us. I remember at one point I looked across the room at Elizabeth. We had been up the whole day trying to make sure everything went, you know, good. I think I looked at her and I was like, I need food. Like, you know, like it, never that we want to end conversations, but it was just so much connection, right? And genuine connection. And that's also what this is really about, is connecting human to human and remembering that even though we might look different or have conversations different, we're all right here. You know, we all kind of have the same goal in mind and the same heart connections.
It just reinforces the beauty of having a shorter film. So there's plenty of time. I mean, the film is powerful and evocative. It makes an impact in a short time, but then people have energy and time and inspiration to talk afterwards for these conversations to take place. And that's ideal.
Yes.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
I felt like that was the perfect place to present present Honoring Choices to the world. I really felt like it was just such a vibrant platform, and also really backed up our message of these conversations don't have to be sad and dismal. You know, they can be approached in a different light.
Yeah. So. Well, as someone who has been part of the hospice world and seeing now that hospice is coming to terms with the racial disparities in care that's being offered, and obviously the recognition is we need to have conversations with people, and we need to encourage communities to open up these conversations. My dream is that Honoring Choices would become a tool that hospices might even use in their own communities, like sponsor the film, screen it in your community, have the discussion and the conversation. If you really want to move the needle, encouraging people to be more open to hospice, we've got to start somewhere with conversations at the very least. And I think it's an ideal teaching tool. And I'm sure you won't disagree with me on that, but
no, we won't. Yes. Yeah, we're excited to share it that way too. We've priced it so that it's a modest amount of licensing fee, and that people can use it. We have moderators that we can recommend, or they can talk about themselves. It doesn't really need a certified person, although it's kind of nice to have someone with some experience in it. But you can also just watch the film and talk it amongst your family or your community. And certainly lovely to do it among hospice workers. Absolutely. And end of life, there's an end of life doula organizations that we would like to offer this to as well. Yeah, we're not into making money. Well, we're a nonprofit, so we're not going to make money. But we would like to be able to offer it to as many organizations as would like it. And if the fee is a problem, we can make some adjustments as well. Because that's, like I said, it's not about the money. It's about being able to share this story. We would like to make, so we have been approached actually about making some other films. So, you know, we do want to keep our options open there. So, but yes, if they come to the website or contact you or us, we can give them all kinds of information about the program and how to license it.
Does it work? Would you say, would it work online to like have a screening of the film online for Zoom, over Zoom, say if people weren't able to get together in one physical place and then have a Zoom discussion about it afterwards?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. It's a video link that can be downloaded and shared that way. That's actually fine. Yes.
So, Hallie, I know you're working right on the marketing and the outreach for the film. What are your next steps? What do you have in mind? What are you working towards?
Yeah, you know, with marketing, the next steps never stop. It's like an endless staircase. So we are doing exactly what Elizabeth said. I mean, we have offered it. It is available for licensing. So if you are someone who's interested in that or being a sponsor of the film, again, go to our website. Okay, disclaimer, everything I'm about to say, the answer is go to our website. But if you're a sponsor who is interested, come to our website. We do have sponsorship, some information available on the site, but you can absolutely reach out through the contact form. And I am the magic wizard behind the form. So it will get sent to me and we'll get you all the information you need. Additionally, we've been talking about how we can shed a little bit more about the film to listeners, followers, you know, people who are interested without giving it away. And this is like the fun puzzle piecing part of it for me as a marketing person, because you're like, okay, this film is like 18 minutes long. I don't want to just give away the ending. I don't want to, you know, tell them everything, but I want them to know about the characters. I want them to know about the plot. I want them to understand why they should even want to, you know, watch this or sponsor that, you know. So that's always interesting for me to tackle. And then additionally, this is a little bit of a shameless, like, you can donate to us, but also for us to keep producing such rich content and really transformative films and conversations, we do have a donation page on our website. And that is very, very helpful for us, because making a film is expensive, and getting good actors, and Elizabeth puts in so many hours just making sure, I mean, like, crazy. She'll text me at 2 a.m. I'm like, or email me, and I'm like, how is she awake? Right? Like, and it takes a lot of just fine tuning. And so your donation is very much appreciated at Grief Dialogues, because then we can put it towards doing this and maintaining it and sustaining it. And that makes it worth it for us. It makes it a little helpful.
Definitely. And I'd encourage everyone to go to the griefdialogues.com website and check that out, how they can support the work that you're doing. And then I know in the intro, I read that Honoring Choices is an official selection of the Legacy Film Festival on Aging in 2023. That's amazing. Where will that be held?
So far, the information that we've received is that it's going to be online this year. It's going to be virtual. They have actually told us that this week they might give us an update on if that's changing or not, but so far it's virtual. It's going to be in January, I believe. And we're super excited, because we got word, I think, as we were headed to the airport leaving LA, and we were just on a high, because we were like, oh, that was the best festival ever. We did it. We finally debuted the film. We did it. And then we got an email, ding. And it was like, you've been accepted. And we were like, no way. So
wow.
We're excited to share more information about that as soon as we get just a little bit more. And definitely you'll see me post about it.
And then, are you interested in applying to other film festivals?
We're actually doing that regularly now. It's film festival season.
It is.
So, and we are members of Film Freeway, so we get notifications when short films or festivals are opening there for their application process. So we are definitely applying. My very first film, I didn't write it; I was just executive producer. But the first film was 8 a.m. It's about traumatic loss, and it did win 13 different screenings of 4 film festivals across the country and in Australia. Wow. So, and it gets, it's a great way to get out information too. So, I do want to give a shout out to Alaska Airlines for a while. Yeah, it was on chosen by Alaska Airlines for online entertainment for a month. I have no idea if anybody actually watched it, but I do want to do a shout out. Compassion and Choices is our corporate organizational sponsor on the film. So they're actually going to be showing a number of their events. And I don't know if it would help. Would you like me to read the film synopsis?
Oh, so that's a great idea. Yeah, why don't you? So, that's a good idea.
When Bob, Denise, and Maggie's elderly father receives a terminal diagnosis, the sisters encourage him to prepare his end-of-life care plan. But Bob wants nothing to do with it. Throw in some family dynamics, disagreements, and resentments, plus a healthy dose of stubbornness, and the scene changes dramatically when Bob is hospitalized. So that's the premise of the story, and you have to watch it to find out what happens next.
Excellent. No spoiler alerts here.
No spoiler alerts.
Okay. All right. Yeah. It's a great story. It's simple. And as we said before, it's universal. It's one that plays out in most families eventually. And so, but it does give you a lot to think and talk about. And I think it's great when people can, you can identify, you can see yourself in one or more than one of the characters. And that also lets you talk about, oh, what would I do if I were in that situation? How would I handle it?
Totally. Exactly. Exactly. That's why we do this.
Well, I like to use this podcast as a way of spreading the word about really good things that are out there in our field.
Well, thank you.
And honoring choices is one of those things. So I just want to put like plant little seeds in people's minds. Think about what your community needs, and maybe you could be part of an event in your community and bring the film there. Maybe you could encourage a local hospice to bring it in or some other organization in your community. Have your own little festival when where you show films like this, and make donations, but also anyone who's connected with a film festival. It sounds like, is that helpful if you have like a little in here and there with film festivals? To
absolutely. Actually, the Legacy Film Festival was because I gave a talk on Out of Illness Comes Art, and I was on a podcast for that. And someone in the audience heard when I talked a little bit about honoring choices, someone in the audience was involved with this festival and she reached out to us. So yes, if there's somebody out there has any kind of connections in the film world, please let us know.
Yes.
Fantastic. Well, maybe one last thing before we go, just tell us quickly about your podcast, because we might as well get people listening to your podcast too.
Absolutely. Hallie, you take it away.
Oh my goodness. So our podcast is so much fun. And that's kind of ironic. I say that because we're talking about grief. But our podcast is called Out of Grief Comes Art. And it's just a podcast to share other artists' stories. And, you know, some of these artists, quote unquote, I use that term loosely, do not consider themselves artists. They are someone who had a grief story or have a grief story. And they figured out, you know, I got to do something about this grief that's sitting inside of me. And so I have taken up this, or I have started doing this, or I really felt a pull to start painting. I mean, we have some really incredible people. Some of these people, I am blown away that we were able to land, but not also not a surprise because Elizabeth kind of like knows everyone, she just knows she's awesome. She just has these great connections or makes great connections. And then somehow just we got really lucky, and this season we're on 22 episodes, and we have guests that are just beautiful people. And I think anybody who listens to our podcast, no matter your demographic, old, young, black, white, you know, whoever, will have somebody on our podcast series that they could relate to or connect with. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things about our series, is that we're not just talking to 50-year-olds who have had 50 years of life experience and are like, we're talking to all ages and all everyone. So it's really interesting to all come together and all be in agreeance that grief sucks and that there are things you can do. So
I love it. Right. Well, as a podcaster, I'm all in favor of podcasts because it's such a great way of telling stories and sharing the word with other people. And so I'm just so excited that you're doing it. And so I encourage people also to listen to Out of Grief Comes Art podcast, but be sure you go to griefdialogues.com, learn more about honoring choices. But Elizabeth, you're doing so much. There's much more to learn about on the website. We only focused in on these areas today, but you're doing a lot with grief dialogues too. So we'll have to have another conversation one day about everything else.
Absolutely. I love talking with you, Karen. Thank you so much for having us on your show.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been so much fun. And Hallie, I'm so glad that I got to know you and what a great team you two are. I just feel the flow between
each other.
You do.
I have to say, I'm so honored that I get to work with Elizabeth and that she puts up with my crazy, but she's really, truly just such a talented person and such a warm-hearted person. And so getting to do this with her makes, you know, it's not it's not even work, you know?
Yeah. Well, the feeling is mutual, and it's nice to be working with someone who's young and energetic, and not that I'm old and not, but you know, well, you know, Karen, after a while, your light kind of dims a little bit. But then after doing, like we just did a podcast, Sally and I, with one very talented writer. Anyway, just, you know, I feel like my light got a little bit brighter working with Hallie today. So it's very mutual.
That's nice. Yeah. And there's a great synergy when we come together and bring our energies together for a common mission and cause. So
absolutely. Exactly.
So I'm happy I got to come together with the two of you today, and I know we're going to talk again, because there's going to be more news for us to share and more good things in the work you're doing. So thanks.
Absolutely.
Again.
Okay. Well, thank you, Karen.
You're so welcome. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Elizabeth and Hallie, and that you will check out the Honoring Choices page on the Grief Dialogues website so you can learn more about the film. And maybe you know of a film festival that you would like to suggest it for, or as I said, some other event in your community that might be perfect for showing this short film. We talked about the importance of representation, and that when we're trying to move the needle and to encourage groups of people to take a look at advanced care planning and to consider creating an advanced directive, it's really important that they see themselves in the process, that they don't feel that this is something that exists for other people, or that was created by someone different from them, and that it doesn't belong to them or fit them. And so that's why I'm really thrilled to see this film with the all black cast, and also learning that the play, which was the original creation by Elizabeth Copeland, has been staged with various casts of different races and ethnicities. As again, it's important that people be able to see themselves reflected in these processes that we're asking them to adapt and get comfortable with. So that's one reason I'm so excited about Honoring Choices and hoping that you'll check it out. If you enjoy content like this, please be sure to share it with other people who also might benefit from listening. You can recommend one particular episode to them, or just tell them about the podcast in general and show them how to subscribe. Also, if you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe and leave a rating and review for the podcast wherever you happen to listen. That's very helpful, and I appreciate it a lot. Also, if you're interested in making a small financial contribution to help keep the YouTube channel and this show on the air, you can go to eoluniversity.com/support, and there you'll find three different ways that you can make a small contribution that will make a huge difference for me, and I really appreciate it a lot. So until we're together next week with another interview, remember, we're here for love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings you next, and love each and every moment of your very precious life. Bye-bye.